Anyone found it?
Good morning, everybody. Pardon me for interrupting your discussions, your conversations. So, let's see.
I was going to say, are we going to make a call?
Okay.
We can wait and take action on
this. Here he comes. Okay, thank you. So we'll go ahead. We have our quorum at this point. We'll move ahead. So let's go ahead and I'd like to have us introduce ourselves, and then we'll go ahead and see if there's anybody that has interested in public testimony. So, Ms. McLaren, please add a little bit to your introduction.
Thank you, Councillor Craddock. My name is Carrie McLaren. I am newly to Metro as the Metro attorney. I started on July 1st. Some of you may know me from my background at the Department of Land Conservation and Development and also as a private practice attorney. So I'm delighted to be here on board at Metro and working with all of you. Thank you.
Thank you. Kelsey.
Good morning. Doug Kelsey with Craddock.
Mandy Putney, ODOT. Emerald Bogue, Port of Portland.
Bob Stacey, Metro Councilor.
Ann McInerney, Ogle Mayor for the City of Vancouver, but also Vice Chair for the APTA North American Midsize Transit System of the Year National Award.
Paul Savas, Clackamas County.
Tim Knapp, Mayor of Wilsonville, representing the cities of Clackamas County.
Jeff DeLane, Mayor of Cornelius, and in case you don't get the Forest Grove News Times, Cornelius made the short list. We are All America City 2019.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Jeff. Nina DeConcini, Oregon DEQ.
Chloe Daly, City of Portland Commissioner. I don't think this is on. It's on.
Craig Dirksen, Metro Council.
Krister.
Jessica Vega Peterson, Multnomah County Commissioner.
Thank you. And Mark. And Shirley Craddock, Metro Council. We'll go ahead and have the audience introduce yourself. Okay. And introduce yourself. Thank you. Mr. Cluster. Okay, thank you. Is there anybody that did not have an opportunity to introduce yourself? Okay, let's move on to the next item then. I just want to see if there's anybody that has interest in testifying before the group. You have 3 minutes. We do not have any blue cards, but I just want to open that up in case someone had a comment to make. Okay, we will move on. So, as we all know, the 2019 legislative session has ended, and Mr. Tucker is here today, Metro Legislative Affairs Manager, and to join us and give us a brief overview of some of the relevant items for the JPAC this morning. So, Mr. Tucker.
Morning.
Good morning.
Randy Tucker. Thank you, Margie. And the operative word about this update is brief, as Councilor Craddock said. I will mention that just last night, ODOT issued its session report. At least I received it, and I can make that available to you. It's actually a much more comprehensive report of everything that that happened with respect to transportation. So I'm just going to give you a couple of high and low points, I guess, to be more accurate, mostly focused on investment. But I'll just mention a few things that happened this session. Obviously, it was not a session like 2017, where there was a major package, and the region didn't go into this session with a huge, proactive agenda. However, there were some things that we were all trying to accomplish. It was, I would say that the results were not especially stellar for the region, especially with respect to project funding. Those of us in the government affairs shops plan to regroup and think about how to be more successful in the future. I'll mention a couple of things that passed and a number of things that failed. So one thing that did pass was there was an omnibus sort of fix-it bill for the transportation package, House Bill 2592, and an amendment was included in that bill that authorizes Metro to go out and get a vehicle registration fee. We have that authority already, but we're blended in with the counties, any kind of local vehicle registration fees under a cap, which is equivalent to what is charged at the state by the state as a vehicle registration fee. And for the purposes of the upcoming potential ballot measure in 2020, we received authority to raise a registration fee outside that cap, under the cap, but separate from the counties. So basically it gives us more ability to raise revenues in the context of the package that everyone's talking about and working on for 2020. And it's a temporary authority that expires after 2022, just as a little cushion. And then, of course, what also passed, which also potentially affects that measure, is the Student Success Act with its preemption on commercial activity taxes, something that we'll be looking at and others will be looking at as whether that barrier is something that needs to be discussed in the future. I'll mention a few other things. The diesel legislation passed. I worked on that personally less than many other people, but it puts into place some timelines for the phase out of older, dirtier diesel engines in the three county area here. Of course, it has other provisions around construction vehicles or off-road diesel engines, has provisions around the VW settlement, et cetera. It's a kind of a long and dense bill. Happy to provide a more detailed summary by email if that's something that would be helpful to people. Couple of things that happened with respect to safety. Cities around the state were given the same authority the city of Portland has to reduce their speed limits by 5 miles an hour, but the city of Portland was not given the authority that it sought to have control over speeds on the rest of its streets. So there was a mixed bag there. One of the biggest pieces of news around the session, but also with some significant implications for transportation, was the failure of the climate bill. Everybody, of course, knows that was the House Bill 2020, that was the reason the Republican senators walked out and created, a national firestorm. The bill included a provision that would have prioritized funding for the implementation of the Climate Smart Strategy. And the language of that provision was slightly improved this session over last session. Last session it said, seek to invest in the implementation of the statutory name for the Climate Smart Strategy, which is, Wonkville. But this year it was changed to prioritize. As you recall, you adopted a resolution, I believe in February, if I'm not mistaken, of support for the Cap and Invest program, but also with the provisions of that resolution called for investment in the implementation of the Climate Smart Strategy. It called for direct allocation of funds to the region to implement that strategy. It also called for monies raised by the Cabot Invest program to be spent in a way that achieves the greatest climate impact for dollars spent. And those latter provisions were not included in the bill. So it's unclear, of course, as you probably all know, exactly what's going to happen going forward with respect to this legislation. It's likely to reappear in February, if not sooner, but I think it's too early to say what's really going to happen. And so we'll continue working to refine that language to the extent that there's an opportunity. The other, I think, major ways that the region fell short were with respect to specific transportation project investments that we sought from the legislature. There was an effort to get the I-205 projects funded. There was a separate freestanding bill, and then also the Speaker of the House, once the revenue forecast came out and showed a large kicker likely to happen, the Speaker of the House introduced a bill that would have diverted some of that kicker money to the I-205 project. She held a meeting that a lot of lobbyists attended about that and said, I believe the quote was, we screwed up in House Bill 2017 in not funding the 405 project. However, that bill, I'm sorry, 205 project, thank you. But that, yeah, they, yeah, funded that one. Yeah. Excuse me, sorry. However, that bill went nowhere, and so we still have some, you know, no money in hand for that project. And then also, the governor's budget had included $25 million for the Southwest Corridor project, and that was in the lottery bonding bill that was introduced, but it was not in the bill that was passed. So we'll be regrouping on those and trying to figure out how to have a more coherent and effective message and strategy going forward in the 2020 and 2021 sessions. A couple other quick things to mention. There was legislation on automated vehicles, which emerged from the Automated Vehicles Task Force, and that one got left in committee at the end of the session, which was a little bit of a surprise. That was focused on testing of automated vehicles. There were a couple of bills on transportation network companies, Lyft, Uber, et cetera. There was a lot of controversy, one of the bills was pretty broad preemption against local government regulation of Lyft and Uber, and local governments fought that pretty hard, and it died at the end of the session. There was another more sort of collaboratively produced bill that didn't actually go very far, and we'll see what happens in the interim and going forward. And I'll just add one more item. You'll recall we actually discussed this when I came before you early in the session. Senate Bill 413, the bill that would have authorized the creation of districts to establish limited access highways. There was broad opposition in the region to that legislation. It had a hearing but didn't go forward. And so I'll stop there and see if you have any questions. Obviously, I can try to answer questions afterwards as well, or send you some more comprehensive information. I'll make available through my team the link to ODOT's summary, which is obviously much more comprehensive than what I just gave you. So anyway.
Thank you. Questions?
Perhaps one comment, if I could. I don't think I heard you mention it, because I think everyone here should know that we had worked with the governor's office closely for... Oh,
just put it closer to your mouth.
Oh, sorry about that. We had worked with the governor's office, and it was in Kate Brown's budget for $25 million for the Southwest Corridor,
right,
which did not make it in the cutting room floor, although that was her intent. So people need to know that. So we have more work to do.
For sure. Any other questions or comments? Councillor Stacey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to make this mic work better. Colleagues, I want to acknowledge Randy for an excellent report and summary, and also note the fact that Mr. Tucker received his 15-year pin at a ceremony earlier this week.
I should be wearing it.
In the good old days, Mr. Tucker and I shared responsibilities for Oregon's land use planning program. He, the lobbyist, me, the executive director of 1,000 Friends of Oregon. Metro stole him away in 2004, and he's exemplified public service in his role here. And we're pleased that he's hanging around a little longer. I know his colleagues in local government rely on him for coordinating a legislative response on behalf of the region as a whole, and I think we're all well served by his continued good work.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you,
Councillor. Sorry.
I use your first name, Mr. Tucker.
Any other questions or comments, Councillor Dirksen?
Yes, I'm curious. Who introduced the bill for the district, the special district for highways?
Well, that was introduced on behalf of former State Representative Rich Vile. He was the primary advocate for it when he was in the legislature, and it actually said on behalf of him on the top of the bill. Incidentally, he has now been appointed Deputy Secretary of State, so he's in the Capitol a lot. The hearing was, he was the only person that testified in favor of the bill. And I testified against it very briefly, and I provided a letter that had logos of all three counties, several cities, several districts on it, in opposition.
Okay. Did you have another question, Kelsey? Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Well, thank you, Randy, very much, and congratulations. There's a few more announcements. I'd like to ask Councillor Dirksen to give us an update on OMPOC, the Oregon MPO Consortium. Councillor Dirksen chairs that group this year and will update us on some of the discussions that are occurring.
Well, thank you. Yes, the Portland metro area is one of eight MPOs in the state of Oregon, and the board of that group meets every quarter to discuss issues of common interest of all the metropolitan areas in the city or in the state of Oregon. And this quarter, that meeting will be here in Portland. It'll be on July 29th here in this room. And the meeting will also include an afternoon tour of the Convention Center Hotel and the Convention Center Plaza construction that's going on. And I bring this to everyone's attention because, well, JPAC members are always welcome to attend OMPOC meetings wherever they are in the state. But particularly because it's going to be here this month, I would invite any JPAC member that would like to come and sit in on the meeting and join us on the tour to come on July 29th. And you can contact Metro staff to find out about registration, what you need to do. But we'd be happy to see you there.
What is the time?
It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning and typically is done by about 2 in the afternoon.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Just as a reminder, there will be no JPAC meeting in August. Metro Council will be on recess. And we know that many of you are also very engaged in the T2020 Task Force and also the local investment teams. And really appreciate everyone's commitment to this and know that it's taken a lot of time and a lot of work. So we will reconvene then in September. So are there any other items that someone would like to share with the group? Okay, well, let's move on to the agenda then. So the first item is the consent agenda, and that's consideration of the June 20th, 2019 JPAC minutes. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Second.
Okay, so it's moved by Commissioner Roberts, Mayor McElroy Ogle. I still hit pop. Pardon me. Yes. Seconded. So all in favor?
Aye.
Okay,
aye.
Thank you. So we'll move on to the item number 5.1. That's the regional mobility policy update. Kim Ellis from Metro and Lydiwin Rahman from ODOT are here to introduce the policy. They will review the process to update it and as well as propose next steps for development of a project work plan and stakeholder engagement to be considered by JPAC and the Metro Council. And would you please correct me on your pronunciation of your name?
Lydiwin Rahman.
Okay. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you.
Chair Craddock. So Ludvine and I are excited to be here today to introduce the Regional Mobility Policy Project to you. This was an outcome of our project identified as part of the 2018 Regional Transportation Plan update in Chapter 8, and really recognize the need for us to re-examine how we're measuring mobility in the region in the long term, as well as how what measures we should be using to define success. So today we are seeking, after we go through, we'll all do the primary presentation, but we'll have an opportunity to ask questions, but also would like your specific feedback on the draft project objectives that are in attachment one to your packet, to the memo, as well as the overall approach that we've identified. And I also want to say this is a joint effort of ODOT and Metro. We are working side by side, locked at the hip, both with Region 1 staff. We are, truly, with Region 1 staff, but also working with headquarters. So we have a project management team that has staff that we're working together on a weekly basis, and we'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So we know that our region is continuing to grow, and as we grow and expect to have another 500,000 people in the region by 2040, that our system continues to get more full as more people and goods travel. And we talked a lot about that as part of the 2018 RTP, and that in particular that congestion is continuing to grow, our economy is continuing to grow, and that's in part contributing to it. But we also know there's other causes of congestion beyond just that growth, and that our current ways of measuring congestion really aren't adequate for helping inform your decision making and investments. And so that's in part what this project will be trying to address. And as we continue to grow and change as a region, we do have systems within the state of Oregon around coordinated planning. So there's requirements for all levels of government to have coordinated planning from federal and state statute. Those coordinated plans with the Oregon Transportation Plan as sort of the overarching transportation policy for Oregon. The RTP needs to be consistent with that. And then city and county transportation system plans need to be consistent with the RTP as well as the highway plan. And so that coordination between all of the different agencies really sets the stage for identifying needs for investment and policies for how we're investing in the transportation system. And as you know, investments traditionally and historically really have been driven by the amount of travel on our roadway system and the amount of congestion, and those are the things that we have focused a lot on in addition to other investments. But that historically, traffic congestion has been one of the primary drivers in how we're investing in our system. In the regional transportation plan, we look at and use volume to capacity ratio as a target to really identify deficiencies in the system. This is the current policy that has been in place for as an interim policy for 20 years. It was developed in 2000, and I'll give a little bit more of a history of that. But at that time, it really was trying to tailor what our expectations for performance of the thruway and arterial network would be based on our 2040 growth concept objectives and objectives around freight mobility, particularly during the off-peak period. And what we have is a two-hour target that we're trying to achieve in certain areas, and then on the thruway system, really trying to ensure that during the off-peak, outside the commute times, that the system is performing well for freight mobility in the region. And this is just trying to illustrate sort of what that looks like. Volume to capacity is one of the most long-standing measures that's been in existence since the 60s. It was developed and used to really identify where the interstate system needed to be expanded over time to address growth in the United States, and has continued to be used at all levels of government for investment decisions. And it's really measuring how full the road system, so how many vehicles are on the system given the amount of capacity four vehicles in that period. Originally, it was using a alphabet grade A through F in terms of a letter grade to talk about A being the best and F being the worst, sort of like grade school. But over time, we also recognized that in the implementation of that, getting to a more precise number was important in terms of being able to measure it. But just having a letter grade with a range was not adequate. And so that's what's reflected currently in the Regional Transportation Plan and also the Oregon Highway Plan today. And that we are allowing for more congestion, and I'll talk about that a little bit more. So the 2000 Regional Transportation Plan was the first plan, or Regional Transportation Plan, to implement the 2040 growth concept. At that time, the level of service policy or congestion policy for the region was level of service D at all times a day for all facilities, regardless of what the function or role those facilities were playing. And at the time, we went through an extensive analysis with JPACT and the Metro Council and also members of MPAC to really examine what would be a more reasonable set of expectations for performance. We did some technical work to try and build to that level of service, and we found at that time that even with widening every freeway to five lanes in each direction, that we would not be able to meet that policy. In addition, through that work, we also found that the public isn't really expecting that level of mobility. They were unwilling to pay for what it would cost to actually build that system. And then even more importantly, I think the potential impacts of that type of system on community, the environment, and other goals that had been established. And so that would result from trying to build to that level of service. At that time, they adopted the policy that I showed in the previous slide, and then we requested an amendment by the Oregon Transportation Commission to amend that policy specific to this region into the Oregon Highway Plan, and that happened in 2002. And so that has been what has been in place specific to the Portland metropolitan region since that time. But in addition to accepting more congestion during the peak periods, that RTP also adopted some new strategies for managing congestion and assessing how we were doing. And so that RTP also set targets for reducing driving alone trips. It set targets for how we were sizing the system and also working to ensure a better connected system for all modes of travel. And so you'll see that there. And then also adopted policies around better managing parking, particularly in areas that were going to be well served by transit and walking and biking options. So the 2040 centers and areas that are served by frequent transit service. So those policies are still in place today. In 2010, we then continued to transition to looking at a broader set of outcomes for the RTP. This RTP was the first one that actually had equity as a goal, had public health as a goal, and also climate reduction or greenhouse gas reduction at that time. And in that RTP, we found that we could not meet the mobility policy and identified the need to look at it in the future. We didn't do that through that process, but did identify that as something to do in the future, and introduced new concepts around mobility corridors and this notion of system completion, that the sense that there is a finish line that we're trying to get to with our transportation system, and that we should be working towards investing in all parts of the system through these mobility corridors. This illustration here shows what a mobility corridor is as defined in the Regional Transportation Plan, and it's really sort of recognizing that multiple facilities parallel to each other are accommodating people and goods on multiple routes and multiple ways, modes. So you have your throughway system that has parallel, in many cases, arterial networks that serve walking, biking, and transit. Many of our throughway corridors also have high-capacity transit or planned high-capacity transit for the future. And then in some corridors like I-84, which is sort of the sort of idealized version of this, also has a freight rail corridor that's connecting and bringing goods into the region and out of the region. So it's really trying to provide these different building blocks for how we're thinking about transportation investments and thinking about people and goods and not just vehicles. And then the last update to the RTP that we completed last year continued the emphasis and advancement of performance-based decisions. So we have a whole array of new system performance measures that are part of how we're looking at performance of the overall system, what we're trying to get to through your direction and the Metro Council direction. We also identified equity, safety, climate, and congestions as priorities for us to continue to focus our efforts on post the update. And at the federal level, there's been new work and focus on reliability for people and freight. And so those pieces are all part of what this project will be building on as we go forward and trying to sort of reframe how we're thinking about mobility across people and different modes, people and freight. And so one question, and we are still working to really get to what is the thing that we're trying to fix here and talk about, but really the why is this project important to do now? We failed to be able to demonstrate that we met state law, and that is an important, while bureaucratic, it is important that that we are consistent with the Oregon Highway Plan, and we could not demonstrate, particularly for the thruway system, that we could meet that policy. And so that triggered having to do some further work. Cities and counties in the region are increasingly finding it difficult to meet the current policy, and this is really playing out particularly in areas that we want to have more growth to implement the 2040 growth concept. Some of it's in concept plan areas, particularly at the edge of the region. There's a lot of external trips coming into the region that are contributing to congestion, but also growth in centers and downtowns that are designated for future growth are having challenges meeting the current policy, and I'll talk a little bit more about that and how it's used. And then a third piece is that this is an important time to work to better align that mobility policy with those priorities that you identified as part of the 2018 RTP update, and that also is helping advance state and local goals to continue shifting away from just measuring vehicles to actually measuring people and goods and the kinds of trips that are important for people to be able to make on a daily basis, get to jobs and other destinations. We also know that to meet the policy we have in the plan, we can't afford it. We have a $42 billion financially constrained RTP right now, and we cannot afford all of the projects. There's more work to be done to raise the revenue that's needed, and T2020 is helping us move there, but there is more work to do. And then also the potential impacts are still of a concern, and I would say now we have a better, even better understanding of what those potential impacts are from a land use perspective and 2040 implementation, but also greenhouse gas emissions and equity and other goals identified in the RTP. So just to sort of think about this graphic is really trying to illustrate that there's a lot of complexity around the current policy and how it's used and where it's applied in Oregon. Each of these boxes is a sort of a piece that doesn't use exactly that mobility policy, but uses volume to capacity ratio to inform decision making. And so for the system plan level, so an RTP or local transportation system plan, they're really the volume to capacity ratio is a target that is used to look out to the future, given growth and jobs and households in the region, how will the road system perform to identify deficiencies in the system? Where are the areas that we are not meeting it that then we can identify solutions? It's also volume to capacity ratio is then used as a standard, which is a lot less, is not flexible. It's a pass-fail, essentially, for regulating plan amendments. So when a local government is going forward to adopt a concept plan, for example, Oregon City went through this last year. They, for the Beaver Creek concept plan area, they were not able to demonstrate that they met that policy and then and went through a process with ODOT to request an amendment to the Oregon Highway Plan to adopt an alternative standard. So there are provisions that allow for changing the standard or calculating how well you're doing with plan amendments, but it also is difficult to achieve, and it's taking time to do that work. It's also used by local governments as a basis for collecting fees or projects in lieu of fees as part of mitigating impacts for development. And then it's also used by ODOT and local governments to design projects. So one thing that has come out through our scoping phase is that they're not all aligned in how the targets and the standards are different in some respects. And so sometimes what we're planning for in the future is not what we're designing for at the end in terms of building projects on the ground. And actually, one point that I want to highlight is the two boxes with the orange asterisk. That is the focus of this effort, but we want to recognize that there's other work that will need to come out of this or that will follow this into the future, and I'll talk about that in a bit. This is just trying to sort of start defining sort of a set of terms for what a policy is. It's a statement of intent and direction for achieving our desired outcomes sort of at a regional or system level. We have the volume to capacity ratio measure that is really then used to set targets and standards for how we're going to assess progress towards that broader goal. And currently, the measure for mobility in the RTP is volume to capacity ratio, but we use them as targets to identify deficiencies and think about potential solutions. And then a standard, as I said, is a threshold. So it's a pass-fail. And while there may be ways in which to adjust that standard through going through a process, but it is a pass-fail for regulating plan amendments, mitigating development, and then also on road design. So this is trying to just illustrate sort of the trajectory of where some of this work could go beyond this project. So this is a two-year effort. We're in the scoping phase now and are hoping to complete the project by mid-2021 so that then we can work with ODOT and the Oregon Transportation Commission to forward that to be incorporated through the Oregon Highway Plan. ODOT staff and the OTC are now in the process of scoping an update to the Oregon Transportation Plan as well as the Oregon Highway Plan. Right now, we don't know enough as to whether or not this work will be folded in as part of the highway plan or amended separately, but it will require an amendment to the Oregon Highway Plan for state facilities in our region to replace what was adopted back in 2002. Then we will also work to incorporate the updated policy into the next regional transportation plan update and functional plans, because that is how the RTP is implemented through local plans. The areas shown in gray are sort of future post regional transportation plan update, which will be due by the end of 2023, that would be implemented through local transportation system plans and other local ordinances, as well as given all of the different sort of planning and design related activities, that it does seem that there will be some other work that will need to occur around state and local standards and guidelines and best practices for how it's implemented through those other areas that I described. This is the draft timeline that we've laid out. Between now and the end of the year, we are working to develop a work plan, an engagement plan that we will be asking you and the Metro Council to approve by resolution to direct the work going forward. We're really trying to be in fact-finding mode, understand what the problems are and challenges are with the current policy, and what kinds of measures should we be examining replace or refine the current policy that's in place. We are recommending that next year we would then go into a case study, development of case study and testing different approaches so that we can actually apply it on the ground. This is a very complex and challenging topic, and really we need to see what the implications and understand what the implications are for different facilities in different parts of the region, but to work towards having a recommended policy by mid-2021 so that it can be used as a basis for a new foundation for the next update to the regional transportation plan. This is the purpose statement, the sort of in highlighted in blue is really sort of the more simplified way to be thinking about what we're doing, but updating how we are defining mobility and how we're measuring success of our transportation system for people to be able to get where they need to go and to the destinations that they're going to. These are some of the measures that have already been identified for us to think about and consider as part of this work. There are more listed in Attachment 1 to your memo, but we obviously would, if you have specific feedback on measures that you would like to see examined, that's also important. In terms of partnerships and engagement, the decision-making bodies will be you, the Metro Council, and then also the Oregon Transportation Commission for the Oregon Highway Plan amendment that will be needed. We're proposing at this time that we'll be relying on existing committees, both regional committees that Metro convenes, but also county-level coordinating committees and other committees that are out there to help provide feedback and input throughout the process. And then we'll be doing targeted outreach, particularly to cities and counties, because this does have a lot of implications for transportation system planning in the future. And so we are proposing to work through the coordinating committees, as well as engaging business and freight practitioners. There's a lot of consultants in the region that help support development and analysis of transportation system plans, plan amendments, as well as project design. So we're trying to bring that expertise into this, as well as developers and community-based organizations. We need to ensure that the policy that comes out of this process is equitable and is accomplishing those goals and priorities that have been identified in the RTP. To date, we've been working directly with TPAC and MTAC and also the Coordinating Committee TACs. We are happy to come present to the policy level coordinating committees as well. We've been to the Metro Council. We'll be going to MPAC. We are also, several of you will be contacted by Gene Lawson and Associates Public Involvement. We are doing a series of stakeholder interviews to help inform the scope of work as well as the engagement plan and how we should be addressing this update. And so those interviews will be happening over the next month and a half, and we'll bring that report back to you. We are also convening a discussion group of community leaders similar to what we did during the Regional Transportation Plan update to provide a forum for community leaders to weigh in on this process early. This is just highlighting what we've heard so far in terms of what people would like to see come out of this process, wanting to ensure that it's equitable to remain focused on outcomes, not outputs or inputs, but really what those broader set of outcomes, to make how we're measuring mobility more multimodal. It needs to be also achievable, something that is realistic for us financially, politically, technically, to be able to accomplish, and then strive for simplicity, which this, these are all very will be challenges. I'll just say that. We want it all. And provide flexibility, both in terms of supporting local plans, but also recognizing that different facilities have different needs, different functions, and so that there is an aspect of tailoring. But it also, I think one thing that really resonated with me, that it can't be so flexible that there's no accountability. There can't be so many measures that there's no accountability, that we need to find sort of that sweet spot in there. We also need to be forward-thinking. We know travel behavior, travel trends are changing. What people are expecting is changing. We have significant transportation needs. There's also a lot of housing affordability and other issues that are out there that are interrelated directly and indirectly to this policy. And we need to ensure that in the end this is supporting implementation of the 2040 growth concept and really being able to focus growth where we want it to go in the places that we've all been working towards for many years. So this is just a quick highlights of next steps through the end of the year, where we'll be coming back to you in the fall with a draft work plan and engagement plan. You'll have two meetings to be able to provide additional feedback to staff. We will have brought that forward from TPAC after working with them over the summer and early fall. And the two questions that we identified for you today is, do you have any feedback on the objectives of what we're trying to accomplish with this work? And also, how would you like to stay engaged in this process as we go forward?
Thank you very much. So we can take general questions, but then I'd like to go and we move into making sure that we've answered the questions that, that Kim is asking. And also then in the action requested in the memo, of course, is feedback on the objectives, the scope of the policy, and measures to be considered, and the stakeholders to be engaged. So those are the questions that Kim has asked us to give feedback on. So, Councilor Stacey.
My apologies, Madam Chair. We're going to hear from Ms. Rahman as well. You're just here to field the hard questions.
Yeah, she'll help answer questions.
Yeah.
Okay. But we did develop the PowerPoint together.
Exactly. So let's go with questions first, and Commissioner Savas.
Yes, thank you. As far as the first question, objectives, after a couple tours here recently, one yesterday morning and one the evening before.
Can you speak into that directly?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure it's really amplifying very well this morning,
no,
to be honest with you. There's something with the PA system.
Right. Yeah,
turn on.
So getting back to the first question as far as objectives, I'm really wondering if we ought to be looking at, when we talk about modalities or mobility, but really both. It occurred to me after these tours that, the folks that I mentioned this before, a lot of areas in Clackamas County in the urban growth boundary do not have a choice or access to certain modalities, bike, ped, transit. And while we're trying to increase mobility, it seems to me that we ought to be assessing the entire region, Metro's region, as to those areas in which we have significant weaknesses, if you want to call them that. There already seems to be a minimum standard, whether we're underserved, and when you talk about measuring success, I'm really wondering if we really don't assess the areas where there are, severe weaknesses or underservice or however you want to look at, whether it's transit, whether it's bike, whether it's ped. If people don't have access to those three, it's going to be hard for us to accomplish our goals. So I kind of mentioned at the last meeting about gaps, gaps where we have those issues. And I know it's in the minutes. However, I think that that's almost the same thing, what we're really talking about, except it's more significant than just gaps.
Yes, that's helpful.
Okay, Mayor.
Thank you so much. Thank you also for putting slide 3 in there showing the Greater Vancouver growth. The City of Vancouver would like to participate or be involved in this, so if we could have that discussion of what that level of involvement might be, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner.
Good morning, everyone. I feel silly. Is there any point in talking into this microphone?
If you get close to it, it is on.
Real
so you
close.
Need to have it.
Oh, hello. It's the opposite of city council. Well, I'll just keep my remarks really brief. First, I just want to thank Metro and ODOT for undertaking this process. We're beginning a similar process, City of Portland. And as far as feedback and engagement, I feel like my feedback would be just reiterating almost everything you just said. We're very supportive of this approach. We would like to be engaged. And we are. I'll just leave it at that. Thank you.
Okay, so thank you. So, Commissioner Rogers.
I think Tim was next.
Go ahead, proceed.
Are these on well?
Yeah, you just have to bring it really close to your.
Never enough to hear me, I well understand. I don't quibble with any of the process. I think it's well done, and I like what I'm hearing today. On slide 16, excuse me, you kind of put together your timeline, and I appreciate your outreach to the various coordinating committees, and I understand the engagement process, which you always do well. But I don't understand the benchmarks for the local plans, because obviously this is going to take a lot of local plan update. How are you coordinating that, and is this only a Metro and JPAC process, or should we not somehow alter this graph to have benchmarks or points where the local systems are also in coordination?
Yes.
Does that make sense, what I'm asking?
Yeah, it does. So I think, I want to go back to the slide that I had sort of trying to map out where the overall is headed. This one?
No, one before.
15. This one.
Did I say 16?
You did.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, I meant that one there.
This one. Okay.
16, whatever that is.
Yeah, so with this, the focus of this effort will be updating it for purposes of the RTP and the Oregon Highway Plan, but we want to do it with our local partners because of those implications for the TSPs. In particular, going forward. And what we, using case studies, we will be able to help inform what that might look like. And it will result in recommendations for timing for those TSP updates. But we would first need to implement it through the RTP. So this is just getting us to what the updated policy should be so that then we can apply it in the regional transportation plan update, and then it would be following that regional transportation update that the timelines for local TSP updates would really kick in.
Yeah, I guess I would take suggestions on how best to engage the local governments beyond the coordinating committees. I think we're pretty open to suggestions if that requires us going out to, you know, dare I say it, every city council in the region. You know, we're happy to do that. I think this is a really important policy update.
Just a quick comment. You guys do terrific. I mean, there's no question that you have a practice of engaging people. But there is no expectation until after the process for the locals. And it would be nice if there were some expectations that they would have check-in points.
Right.
So you don't get to the end and then everybody raises their hand and says, that was terrible, I was never engaged and I don't like it. So I'm just trying to figure out how you do that.
Yeah, so we will work to show that within what we bring forward to you with the draft engagement plan, because similarly we will need to do the same with the Oregon Transportation Commission because of the implications for the highway plan.
Okay, so I'll go with Mr. Kelsey, then Mayor Knapp, then Ms. DeConcini, and then Mandy. And we're we're getting close to running out of time, so go for it.
Quickly, thank you very much. I think really exciting. I just want to applaud the thinking that you're putting into this, a really complex subject. And just a few points for consideration. One, just you look at metrics, I encourage you to look at leading versus lagging metrics. So we're not looking at historic, you know, the data, so we're actually positioning ones that chase us to where we're not. So for that comment. The second one I might, on the metric side, think about an asset effectiveness metric. We know, as you've indicated so nicely, we're short on money. So I'm looking for past lives when we used to do a lot of network planning nationally. We used to get to market effectiveness, where the amount of assets divided by your modal share should at least have a ratio of one. Are you the amount of money you're spending? So we don't just big ribbon cutting big capital projects. The questions are we getting effectiveness of its use long term as well. So sometimes it's best to spend less and actually get more effectiveness. So it's not always about how much capital can you spend, particularly when you're in a capital constrained environment. So I just want to suggest an asset effectiveness metric. And I just also something for consideration is as you talk nicely about transit oriented developments. It's around percent, perhaps a consideration around access to major corridors, the percentage of commuters who have access. So it forces the densification conversations, it forces the transit-oriented development conversation, and not two- and three-story things, but how the region has to start to go up so people are actually physically a lot closer to the products that we provide. So we actually start to feed in our own urban policies the limited dollar investments that we actually have, so you can actually track that over time. I'll stop there, but I've got other comments as well. And it also encouraged me perhaps a global best practices search. What are others doing that we can learn from as we Portlandize our success?
Yeah, and that is some of the early work that we'll be doing with TREC. We've reached out to identify what are other states, other regions, and also local governments doing around this.
Yeah, and congratulations on the goods movement side. That's just so important. So to the people. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Mayor Knapp.
Thank you. A couple of thoughts about the whole approach. It seems highly technical and focused on volume to capacity things, which do not seem to really relate to the concepts of system completeness, interrelatedness of different modes, the practical, you know, can you get from here to there with some mode other than getting in your single occupant vehicle. And it seems to me that we need to have some kind of measures that I did not see reflected on slide 11 or some of the others that really would bear on that in a much stronger way. It seemed to me that part of the message I was hearing was that we can't meet the targets statewide, we can't meet the targets region-wide, we need to do something else. Okay, well, just reevaluating our volume to capacity ratios is not going to get us there. Obviously, we're going to have to look at how do we give people options, and that bears on this whole question of do people genuinely have another option? Are there systems available to them? Does transit, you know, meet them where they need to be and go where they need to go? Do bikehead facilities do the same thing? We know that there's large gaps throughout the systems in much of the region, and I'm just concerned, given the methodologies I heard described, that we're not going to be really evaluating those system challenges in ways that are ultimately reflected in the plan, something other than a statistical, you know, kind of an outcome. So I think that's a challenge. I would encourage staff to engage with the Metropolitan Mayors Consortium. I think that they've had a lot of discussion about transportation impacts on their communities, and certainly each mayor has some close perspective on what's happening in their localities, and could well be part of a significant dialogue, I think, if that was planned out. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good point. It's similar to what Commissioner Salvas was saying. Ms. DeConcini.
I just have a really quick question about the public health. I love all the other additional goals on climate and equity. I'm just curious, are you partnering primarily with County Health or Oregon Health Authority? I'm just curious who the partners are in that realm.
So right now, the conversations have primarily been with the county public health.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm meeting with them on Monday, and I don't know whether they've brought in. They've been organizing themselves to get up to speed on what this is.
Okay.
To figure out how they want to engage, and that'll be a question that I
Excellent.
Can ask
okay.
of them.
Thank you. Just was curious who it was.
Yes.
Thanks, Kim. Great job, both of you.
Okay, thank you. Mandy.
I just wanted to take a minute to acknowledge the work that Kim and Ludvine have done to date. It's been extensive, and that we're lucky to have their breadth and depth of knowledge and expertise about this issue, which is, as you've all noted, very complicated and technical. And so this will be Ludvine's last major effort post-retirement. She's come back to do this, and so we're very happy to have the two of them leading us through this scope.
Thank you. Mr. Kelsey, did you have another comment? I see your card's up.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to. I will take advantage of it. you'll never do that again. I just might ask, sometimes when there's so many metrics, which ones do you need to win at? Yeah. Versus which ones do you track versus which ones do you win? Because sometimes you may not be able to be successful with everything. So which are primary and which are secondary as well? So some may be more North Star type of metrics that are the tallest poles in the tent for all of us.
Okay.
Doesn't seem like I need to be very close to this mic.
I feel your pain.
It's okay. I think it'd be bad for me. It's there's a lot of work, but I think we have some core problems, and I'm not sure how this is going to get to some of those. I live almost as far west as Forest Grove, so I can't get my scout families to take mass transit in and out of town because they don't feel it's safe. Every time they get on and off of it, they have a bad experience. So getting more people on transit, we have a core problem. And the people I know can't be the only ones that won't let their kids and won't let their wives ride the MAX because of fear of safety issues. So I think that's something we need to look at. On the technical side of things, when Google recommends that I use Barnes Road and Burnside to get in and out of Portland, it's very indicative of our systematic failure. I think there was a very good discussion on NPR the other day about you can't build yourself out of capacity, build your way out of these capacity problems, but we do need to strategically look at the capacity system we have, to what Mr. Kelsey brought up about maximizing our assets. If Burnside's becoming a better way to get in and out of Portland than Highway 26, this problem's on its head. So I think we need to stop and look at some of those clear things, that how broken is the system and how do we try to address those? Because maybe Burnside needs to be four lanes instead of adding money to 26. But I don't know. I mean, this is some of the things I want to ask, because these are the real things that I'm seeing go on. Thanks, guys.
Comment. Thank you. Councillor Dirksen.
Thank you. I was thinking in terms of the comments that have been made about how do we continue to engage the entire region during this process. And as I look at this at this slide and the underlying one where it says targeted stakeholder outreach and engagement, I think the crux is who's the target of that? And I would suggest that at least at one level that the county coordinating committees, to include the Southwest Washington Transportation, would be a good place to start to get both input and also to provide updates. And in that way, you wouldn't have to reach out to every city council because every city is represented on all of those.
Good point. So, Kim, just wanted to check in here. So you were asking for some feedback regarding the objectives, the scope, and the measures. Are you feeling like you got some good feedback?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Is there anything else that we didn't?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. We will move on to the next agenda item then. I'd like to now introduce Elizabeth Morris O'Hara and Grace Cho and regarding the congestion pricing technical study. We have until the end of the meeting.
All right. 27 minutes. Great. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Can we offer it?
Once it gets going, maybe.
We can recognize our just maybe recognize. The agenda was optimistic that we would have done early today.
That's why I was confused. I was like, okay.
Shirley has done that in the past, but it's not happening today.
Okay, well, my name is Elizabeth Marissa O'Hara. I am the project manager for the Regional Congestion Pricing Study. Grace Cho is working with me on the project. And
I'm excited to introduce the project to you today and let you know a little bit about what we're planning to do over the next 2 years and get some feedback from JPAC on what we're intending. So I want to start with just we are early in the scoping process, and we're still figuring out exactly what we're planning on doing. So I want to start off with why we're doing this now, talk a little bit about our preliminary scope and schedule, outcomes we're hoping to get to, how our project is going to relate with some other projects going on, and provide some opportunities for you all to weigh in and ask us questions. JPAC's role is going to be really important to us. We need to hear from the region about what kind of policy considerations we need to be taking into account. We'll be also working with TPAC on understanding and sharing our technical findings and having them kind of weigh in on some of that. And in addition, Metro Council is going to be the overall project guider, and they're going to guide us through this and also provide policy input as we go forward. So let's see. So what is congestion pricing? I think a quick reminder, it sounds like people around this table have a pretty good feel for what it is, but it's using a price mechanism like tolls or road user fees or parking fees to alert drivers to the external costs of their trips. And when it's done right, it's been really successful at changing traveler behavior. What we're finding is that people will change the time they take a trip, take fewer trips, change modes to transit or biking or walking, carpool, and use different routes. And the result is reduced congestion and reduced greenhouse gas emissions. So it's something that we're really ready to take a look at. The reason it's so urgent right now is we know congestion's bad. It's getting worse. As you just heard from Kim, our region is growing. We're anticipating 500,000 new residents coming to the region by 2040. All the projections are showing that vehicle hours of delay are going to get worse. It's something like 120% increase is projected by 27, and in addition, travel or surveys of people in the region have shown that this is a serious issue for people, and it's something that is 76% of our region thinks it's a serious problem, and that's like almost double of the number of people that said that in the 2015 survey on the same question. We know we can't build our way out of congestion. I just heard from the smart people at this table. The vicious loop of traffic congestion would come upon us when you add new capacity. People are excited about being able to move more freely, and so they change their behavior. They change the time that they travel. They take more trips. They take routes that used to be congested, and pretty soon you have congestion on those routes again. So we need to pair any kind of investments we do in improving our transportation system with travel demand, and congestion pricing is a really good way of supporting the efficient use of the infrastructure we have now. The other, big thing in the room is, climate change is upon us. We just had the hottest June on record for the world, and transportation is a major source of greenhouse gas emissions.
40%.
Yeah, it's 40% use in of Oregon's emissions. And our current transportation system also today isn't equitable. Congestion hits all of us, but it's especially hard on people who are displaced and need to move further out, have longer commutes. It's especially hard on people that don't have access to a car and are stuck in traffic on a bus and have very long commutes. So we need to be thinking about not only how we can use this tool, but how we can use it to reflect our values. So this isn't a new idea. You guys have all been hearing about it. We've had multiple plans that have identified the need to move toward more travel demand management and consider congestion pricing as a tool. In a 2018 RTP calls for a near-term comprehensive congestion pricing study, and that's why we're here. We need to pair our investments in transportation with travel demand management. It's also a Metro Council priority, so we're on it. And we're not the only people that are looking at congestion pricing. There are other efforts underway, and we need to coordinate with those. You're all also, I'm sure, familiar with the fact that House Bill 2017 and the Oregon Transportation Commission has directed ODOT to look at a tolling project that would address key bottlenecks on I-5 and I-205. And so our ODOT is underway in that process, and a lot of folks around this room have been involved in that. And they're in the pre-NEPA process, and they're going to be working through that. So we need to be aware of what they're doing and make sure that we're talking to each other and on the same page. In addition, the City of Portland is undertaking a pricing for equitable mobility study, and they're really focused on how changes in travel demand and congestion pricing and other travel demand measures can help improve equity in the city. And their focus is really on areas that they have jurisdictional purview. So what are the things that within the City of Portland they can control? And that leads to kind of the bigger question. Metro is in a unique position where we can take a wider look at how congestion pricing could perform across jurisdictional boundaries with our region's transportation system and land use conditions. And so we want to take that kind of bigger look and at the same time be coordinated with these efforts, but know that we're doing different work than they are. Let's see. So our goal is to understand how our region could use congestion pricing to manage traffic demand and to meet climate goals without adversely impacting safety or equity. We're hoping that we'll be able to inform and educate the efforts going forward and be coordinated with others that are taking a hard look at this. And kind of, I think we want to be able to provide a baseline understanding of how different congestion pricing tools can work. So we are going to, we're anticipating assessing the performance of tools from that wider perspective, from that regional perspective, to answer the big picture questions with a technical answer, I guess. You know, what are the most effective pricing tools that we can use? What are the effects of those different tools? And how can the tools perform in our region? To do that, we're still finalizing our scope, but we're anticipating doing kind of a more deep dive technical feasibility look at 3 to 4 different pricing tools. And the four that we're looking at right now are cordon pricing, that's charging a fee for those entering into a congested area, and sometimes it includes a fee for moving around within those areas. Vehicle miles traveled user charge, it's a tool that looks at the distance people are traveling and charge them for that. Roadway, there's multiple ways of doing that. It's looking at charging for roads that are congested. It could be looking at roads over a certain amount of volume. It could be looking at key roads that are particularly congested, and we'll have to kind of dig into that, probably have multiple iterations to kind of figure out what's working there. And then in addition, parking, charging for parking in specific areas or increasing parking to see what the effects are on people's behavior. So all of these scenarios are going to be measured against our region's 4 priorities that were called out in the regional transportation plan. We need to make sure that not only are these tools doing a good job at managing congestion and reducing greenhouse gas emissions, but we want to make sure also that we are not increasing racial and low-income disparities. We have a lot of equity issues in the way our transportation system is working right now, and we'd like to, if anything, improve those with these tools. And then also measure how it affects safety, because we want to get to Vision Zero. That's been called out in all of our planning documents, and it's important for us to move the needle on safety. To do this, we're going to kind of take a step-by-step evaluation and then have some iterations to understand how things work. We want to test for reducing congestion and greenhouse gases, test the scenarios, see what's moving the needle. If things look very promising, then I think we need to really dig into the potential impacts to equity and safety of these tools, trying to understand how they're affecting different vulnerable populations, how they're affecting safety. And we haven't figured out exactly how we're going to measure all these things yet. And then also explore and model mitigations to address the impact. So some of the things that we could be looking at is if it appears that there are some serious equity implications. What happens if you improve transit in those areas? What happens if you invest in sidewalks and other access to transit? And also, are there tools like that are being used all over the place, I should say, where you reduce fees for certain groups? And so we may not be able to answer all those questions, but we need to kind of explore those fee structures and how they can work in get a more comprehensive idea of how the different tools could work in our region and how they could be successful at helping us meet our goals. In addition, we're going to be looking for strategic advice, not only from leadership here. We're going to be addressing TPAC and getting feedback in Metro Council, but we want to hire some experts in congestion pricing to really help us learn from lessons that they've got from where they've been working on these projects throughout the world and in the United States, and shape our study and evaluate our results, make sure that our findings are looking reasonable. And we also want to have an expert panel review our findings and help us target the way we would move forward, what kinds of things we need to dig into more. One of the things that we're sure of is that we're not going to be able to study everything. We're not going to be able to get to, you know, projects with this. We want to get to policies and understandings, and we're going to need somebody to help point out, you probably don't understand enough of this. This is probably a next step. In addition, we don't anticipate having a big stakeholder committee, but we would want to do some targeted stakeholder engagement and make sure we're not missing something. We haven't defined that yet, but it could be focus groups, it could be some individual conversations with jurisdictions that have special considerations. We need to figure that out. In addition, some of the tools like cordon pricing are likely to affect certain areas, like the city of Portland is most likely to be looking at that because of the congested areas of downtown. So we would need to coordinate very closely with the city on that. If we're looking to transit mitigations, we want to be closely coordinating with TriMet, making sure that what we're proposing makes some sense as well. So there'll be a lot of conversations. Our expected outcomes are really us being smarter about how regional congestion pricing could work. We want to inform the discussions on implementing congestion pricing and policy implications so that we can move forward and try to outline our next steps for evaluation. It's really about educating and kind of creating a baseline understanding of how the tools could work in our region. So we are, like I said, in the very beginning of our project right now, and I don't even know if people can totally read this, but we're scoping right now, and we're anticipating that we would like to hire a consultant to get their expertise on board in August. Then we want to move into defining our pricing scenarios, and we'll undertake some modeling to understand how they could work, analyzing and modeling scenarios from fall 2019 to summer of 2020. We'll be coming back to JPACT at key milestones to get your input on scenarios, measures, findings, and policies. And we anticipate concluding in 2021. So I want to open it up to questions. Any thoughts on these scenarios and concepts? Any regional considerations for pricing and other questions you all have?
Okay, well, let's go ahead and go to questions. So, okay, Commissioner Thomas.
Yes, thank you. This is a difficult decision or discussion, and that is that I'm just reflecting a little bit on the earlier conversation on access modalities, what we have and we don't have, and also understanding what Mr. Kelsey had stated. We do have a built environment, and had, in the sense that we know where people live, and we know who has access to transit and who does not, who has access to bike ped options and who does not, and coming from a county that has a substantial amount of underserved or not access to any of those modalities in a lot of areas, populated areas, it seems to me that it appears as though this is, in a way, to me, somewhat premature. If we had a built system and we had access to bike and ped and transit in the metro region everywhere, and people were just not utilizing it, then I think this would be more appropriate discussion or a more appropriate method. Now, there are areas in the metro region where you have all of that. We're in the center of that right now today, where we sit. But on the edges, a substantial amount of our population does not have access to that. So it seems to me we're punishing the underserved areas, whether they're underserved by transit, whether they're underserved by bike ped. And though they might want to get from point A to point B, maybe there's a maybe there's a transit link in between their destination and their original point. Where's equity in that? I think equity needs to be measured. You had your four areas there on slide 11, and either equity needs to be redefined as to having access, or you need to add a fifth box for access, because those people should not be. It's just unfair. I just wanted to just tell you this is something that's very the commissioners. I just briefly had a brief discussion with them on Tuesday, and this. I don't know that we're going to be very supportive of a system where we don't have access, and our system just frankly is not mature. I have serious issues with this. But I have a question. What money is being used for this study? I was kind of it strikes me a little odd that as opposed to JPAC being, as the MPO, JPAC being the project, if you will, or the decision maker, it states in here, or you kind of stated or alluded to, that it would be a metro thing. So I'm kind of wondering where the dollars come from to fund this study.
The study right now is being funded by MPO funds, and in other regions, it's very common for MPOs to do a study first before there's a conversation about where to put it. I think Oregon is in a unique situation in that our legislature went first, and our legislature decided locations very quickly on what would be the best places to toll via HB 2017, which did not give us the time in this region to do the study that, in my opinion, I think should have been done prior to deciding where tolling should be go to kind of have these global conversations. So we're really doing it backwards, but it's considered doing a type of any kind of pricing study is a very typical MPO role and is a allowed use of our federal dollars, our MPO dollars.
So just for clarification, is there any argument that the MPO is JPAC, it's not Metro? Is there any disagreement with that?
No, we are.
With that,
we are the MPO. You're sitting there.
You're part of the MPO and the Metro Council.
Yeah.
I understand that. So it seems I'm just kind of puzzled by the fact that
that's why it's before us today, because we'll be influencing the decision and the next steps for this body.
And there was two major opportunities to weigh in on whether or not this was a good use of our MPO funds. The first was in Chapter 8 of the RTP. This was called out as a future study. And so when the RTP was adopted by this body and by Metro Council, it gave us the go-ahead to start the study. The second moment, and we had a lot of people involved in this year, was our UPWP, that's our Unified Work Plan, which we gave a detailed description of how we would be kicking off the study, as well as a very detailed accounting of how our MPO funds would be used. And that was also in there, and that UPWP was also adopted by this body and by our Metro Council. So this should not be a surprise. All of those also were approved by our Oregon FHWA office as approved use of our MPO funds.
Let's go on. Commissioner Peterson.
So I just had a question. So I appreciate we're doing this region-wide study to look at this issue, because I think that with the work that the legislature is doing, with the city of Piedmont and the city of Portland's look, there's a lot of interest in this as a way to really impact some of the congestion issues and mobility issues that we were talking about earlier. I'm curious, once we have done this study, what is, because there are a lot of cooks in the kitchen and a lot of people who have different authorities, what is Metro's authority to actually put congestion pricing into place, or are we working with the local jurisdictions that actually manage the roads to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think if anything I would add to this excellent presentation by Elizabeth was recognizing that we are not a road authority. and recognizing the state statute that ODOT is the tolling authority. I actually think it's better that we, because we have road state authorities. You are the state tolling authority, yes. The state tolling authority via statute. We are not looking at implementation. We are, think of us as a third party researcher studier, and this is typically why MPOs study it first, because they're not the road authority, so we've got, you know, or the tolling authority. So we recognize that up front. There's nothing on the table that suggests that Metro is going to implement anything as part of this. As Elizabeth stated, it's really important that we are trying to educate and learn from further studying this issue.
Thanks. Okay. Mayor.
Thank you so much. Ms. O'Hara, thank you for an excellent presentation. I'm very excited that you have close coordination with TriMet, but remember that C-Tran being the number one North American mid-sized transit out of 2,500 systems on the entire continent, we do bring in over 2,000 people in peak time. Just, that's not our daytime, that's just our peak time. 2,000 individuals in and out of Portland. So perhaps there's an opportunity for C-Tran to be involved in this.
That's an excellent point. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Volk.
Just a comment and a question. So we're supportive of getting smarter on all of these things, and we appreciate it in the sense of, you know, the state's work sort of forced us really quickly into this discussion about what and where and how, but we are eager to have a better understanding around these how questions. And speaking of getting smarter, I could wrap my head around cordon pricing, VMT, and roadway. Can you say a little more about parking?
So, in the sense that people
sort of already pay to park in certain areas of the city. So just the cliff notes on what is that?
Sure. So it's looking at if the locations that they're paying to park are the right locations. Maybe there are more locations that people could be paying to park. It's looking at, are the fees appropriate right now? Should the fees vary based on when congestion is the worst, where it can control and kind of signalize to people that maybe they want to take a different mode, these kinds of things.
Commissioner Udaly.
Thank you, Chair. Again, just want to express my general support for this. I think we're very much aligned. I want to mention a couple things. One, Portland has had the honor of being chosen as one of the 25 cities participating in the Bloomberg Philanthropies American Cities Climate Change. So we have extra resources and expertise at our fingertips as we endeavor to look at this subject as well. As was mentioned, we... I still don't have my own committee name memorized. Pricing for Equitable Mobility. Yes. PEM. We really are putting equity at the forefront of this entire process. We do not want to further burden communities that have are already being underserved and burdened. And I just want to encourage everyone involved in this conversation to think about ways that we, and it's a fine line, rather than simply mitigating impacts, how do we advance equity? How do we make our transportation system more equitable, achieve transportation justice, not just cut down on the negative impacts to already impacted communities? And let's see. I mean, finally, I would just like to note that we're already paying a toll. It's a toll in our time. I figured, I did this quick calculation last week when this item came to council. I've spent over 200 hours a year in congestion 200 additional hours on my commute. And if I value my time sitting in my car commensurate with what I'm paid, that's about $12,000 a year in my time that is I'm paying as a result of congestion. And of course, there's also a terrible toll on our environment and the cost to our transportation system, which in Portland alone is, I believe, $14 million to deal with delays in our public transit system, as well as impacts to our local economy and overall quality of life. So I know that the tolls are triggering for people. I would just encourage everyone to think really deeply about the ways in which we are already paying, and that we have a chance to alleviate some of that, make our system more equitable, and achieve other goals as well. Thanks.
Thank you. So it's 9 o'clock. I don't want to overlook your comments, so if you could be brief, please.
Yes.
Mayor Knapp?
Thank you. A couple of comments quickly. The region consists of 24 or 25 cities, depending on whether you believe Damascus is still a city or not. And the needs in many of those communities are different than the core urban area. And so any look needs to really look at the range of different needs across the region. There's somewhat conflicting goals. The goals of the Abernathy tolling objective is to raise a bunch of money to pay for the bridge. The goal of much of this is to change behavior and not have as many vehicles, in which case you won't collect as much money and you won't have as much to spend. So not sure how that shakes out. You're going to have to think about that. The equity question is certainly important. There's many areas where Clackamas County has a lack of connections, a lack of diversion routes available. There's concerns about pushing the lowest income, least economically able sector off into wandering around neighborhoods with no real routes that parallel the corridors that they're to get where they're trying to go. That has impacts on them. It has impacts on the neighborhoods they're wandering through. There's no grid system in the streets in much of Clackamas County. So all of those are important things to include in the evaluation. And like when I look at this slide, I'm seeing really focus on the core urban area and not really talking about impacts on the surrounding area. And I encourage you to try to figure out how to do that.
I appreciate that. There's several comments to that degree, so thank you for that, emphasizing that. Mayor Daley.
Yeah, the quick Daley. One is the an attaboy to ODOT. I think without building entire new freeways, they've figured out ways to address a lot of congestion areas by looking at what's causing the bottleneck. I think my favorite one is people don't know how to change lanes, so merge and diverge is bad. So every time ODOT builds something that helps people handle that. So I think that's one of the things we have to consider also is without building entire freeways to try to eliminate congestion or using the tools to do that, how do you strategically use that money to continue to eliminate bottlenecks? I mean, it may actually be a bridge that's causing a problem where the traffic has to narrow down to go through. But I think that's one of the things we've got to look at. I think everybody else kind of covered the equity and the distance and those factors, so I won't believe that anymore. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kelsey.
The only thing I would just add that is sometimes there's significant types of studies, and to me this is a really crucial one for this region, where it's actually worth speeding it up and putting more resources at it. And for me, this is one of those, and maybe that gets to Commissioner Udaly's comment around resources and such. By the time they're studying and there's actually getting products to market. And if I start to look at 2030, that's where you start to say, how long does it really take once you've got an answer to actually implement? That's the kind of time frame we're looking at when we actually start to implement real congestion products in the marketplace. My concern is to the other sustainability club, it's around climate change and such that I've all referenced. I'm not sure we've got that time. I would encourage us so our mobility policy, our 2040 goals and others, I think this might be one of those areas we need to collectively find more resources to put more horsepower out, leveraging conversations in the world that have already unfolded in front of us. We are not the first people to do this. I think we know a lot of the answers. We need to participate and accelerate these things up. And I say that having been through Olympic Games and others. Let's create the cause to get to the answer quicker and get the product to market. To me, 2030 is too long. Start looking by the time you physically put transit in place, the real product starts showing up. I don't think we have that time. So I'd encourage the group to think about how we resource up and accelerate up.
Okay. Thank you.
Roy and I both second that. We'd like to see something. Yeah. Maybe 2030, yeah. We won't see it anymore.
Thank you. We're over our time, so we'll go ahead and adjourn. Thank you very much. Excellent comments.
Speaking of myself.